Welcome to The Creative Edge, a new occasional series here at KUNR that showcases some of the amazing creative thinkers we have here in the region.
Today's guest has logged some serious miles as a writer, a poet, an explorer, a community advocate, and the founding executive director of Community Chest in Virginia City. He has just published a new memoir about his life and work called Anthem for a Burnished Land, What We Leave in This Desert of Work and Words. This book talks about his work over 25 years, including the creation of a community center in Virginia City, teaching poetry to prison inmates, and saving the Story County Library. Welcome, Sean Griffin.
Thank you, Christina. Thank you, Alan.
Sean, your book looks at your efforts, along with your wife, Debbie, to build community in Virginia City. When you first came to town, seeing the poverty and the needs, you faced a lot of opposition about bringing social services. What was that about?
So I think, you know, we were in a small rural community that had traditionally been able to live by the rules that it thought were best. And we were saying that there was other needs for the community that weren't previously expressed. You know, it's the notion that people can lift themselves up by their own bootstraps, which is fine, but it doesn't work for all people all the time. And so we were essentially challenging the status quo, which is, you know, not what you do in a small community like that. But it could have been any community, truly. And I'm sure the social norms, the people that held up the social norms felt threatened.
A lot of people didn't want to acknowledge that there was poverty in their community, and a lot didn't want to take money from the federal government.
Yeah. The first issue you mentioned was a real issue because I think it would have somehow reflected negatively on their perception of their community. You know, I think the lessons that we had to learn over a long period of time was how to embrace all the stakeholders, everybody, find a way back to that middle ground so that it wasn't a threat. It was more, how can we address this reality, this elephant in the room? And it started, you know, very naively and very innocently when a family lost their home to fire and we were asked to come speak about what happens when, you know, people become instantly homeless, I mean, for reasons of natural disaster. And, you know, it led to a rather large conflagration that caused a lot of grief. But I always say to people that, you know, what comes out of this is you learn the tough lessons about how to live in a community, how to build community, how to find allies on both sides of the fence. It was a lesson we couldn't have been given had we not gone through it.
Yeah, in looking through your book, I was just amazed at the structure of it, the poetry of your language, and an incredible sense of place as well. And I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about, you know, what it took to get there. Like, how did this happen?
It's one of the hardest things I've ever done. I've been writing poetry all my life, and so that's very familiar to me, and I enjoy it immensely. But trying to do a book of prose was a real stretch for this poet. I was like walking into the unknown. You know, I started out, I wrote a book of beautiful words, and I gave it to the editor, and he says, yeah, this is a great book of beautiful words. Can you tell us a story that people want to read? And so, you know, I had to tear the whole book apart last May and June, tore the whole thing apart, rewrote every word, every line, throughout chapters, throughout sentences, to make a compelling arc, a narrative that would push people to the other side. And as the other day, I read briefly from it in a meeting, and someone said, it's still a book of beautiful words. It was terrifying for me. I honestly didn't know when I went back to rewrite it if I could do it, and if it could be something that would be palatable.
You know, it's a very gutsy book, too, I think, to write about the people you know and live with and who are part of your community. And you chronicle kind of the highs and lows very honestly and frankly. And I'm curious how you and Debbie, your wife, Debbie Loesch Griffin, who's your companion in all of this work, we should mention her as well, how you are able to sustain that over time. I think, you know, in my work as a cultural worker, I've been in Nevada for quite a while as well, and you see the kind of highs and lows and the rises and falls of our economic ability in the state, all the different things that come with that, that kind of boom and bust culture. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious how you were able to, you know, ride that wave and what you see as the sustainable piece of that, like what sticks with you?
So there was many nights, as I think I shared in the book, where, you know, we'd lie awake in bed wondering if this was the right decision, if we had moved to the right place, if we had raised our kids in the right place, and if we could sustain the energy and stamina it took to get through to the other side. I always believed somehow, despite all the evidence to the contrary, that we could get through the other side. And, you know, this is very much a book about Debbie. This is not a story. It's our story. And I think had we not been sheltered by that belief, it would have been probably too difficult. We had a million reasons for quitting, but then what? You know, so you go live your life and tell your story somewhere else. It's still the same stuff. It doesn't matter. I grew up in a city. I mean, this is just as tough in New York. It's just as tough in L.A., just as tough in Nairobi. It's not about that. It's not about that. And that's also what we were trying to say. It's about where do you choose to make your mark and make your roots, and where do you choose to really try to shape a community from the inside? I mean, you know, if I had been born in Cape Town, I would have tried to do this there. It wasn't about that we made a conscious decision. We fell into this place. It happened all by accident, but there was so much to do, and it was such a beautiful place to embrace. It's very much a place-based memoir. We were awestruck, and we were naive, and we were really young, and so it happened as much by accident as it did by intention, but there were horribly long interludes of despair. We still said, you know, if you want to make another choice, make another choice. I mean, we're not risk-averse people. We do this work because we embrace risk. And now, of course, it's on the other side. And looking back, it all seems very natural and normal to people. But, you know, it could have been anybody's journey. And as I also said, this wasn't real work, like civil rights work. This wasn't real tough, hard stuff like many people who break the narrative from the previous generation. It was just a bit of a work, you know? So I think it's a parallel journey to 100 journeys. Hmm.
Sean, in this book, you write about your struggles over 2 decades to build a community center in Virginia City. You talk about the trials of trying to raise money, of building all kinds of programs, whether it was preschool or before and after school care, or programs for at-risk teens or counseling programs, efforts to support the arts, to save the Story County Library. And through this all, you keep writing your own poetry, several books of really wonderful poetry. What role did your own writing of poetry play in your life as you were fighting all of these battles?
It was life-saving. If I couldn't have been writing and couldn't have been teaching in the prison, I would have probably just not been able to continue. It was the place I returned to for balance. And, you know, many of my great poetry teachers always said you needed necessity, you needed struggle, you needed a job, you needed to have something to write about. And so that's the side of the fence I've always fallen down on. And I wanted then to find a way to express that in my work, in my poetry. And so it was the border against which I pushed to find the narrative meaning of what I was doing. And I had to write to say that, to explore that, and to flesh out what it was I was up against. Otherwise, if I hadn't had it, it would have been really, really hard, I think. I mean, my good friends that I've known for decades have said, you know, I'm terribly jealous because you are a poet and you have that to return to always. So that was sort of the saving humanity in the room. When I couldn't articulate what would happen, you know, I'd return from the legislature defeated. I'd come from a school board meeting, whatever it was, but I could always wake up and write, and I could find solace there. And so then the day would start all over and I could begin again.
Sean, the title of this memoir is Anthem for a Burnished Land. That's also the title of a poem that you've written. I was wondering if you might read the poem for us.
Of course, I'd be honored to. This is the poem that I read at Governor Sandoval's first inauguration. Anthem for a Burnished Land. If we cannot unravel the drift of days to mark the aspen with what strength remains, not an idea of this dry, dry place, but what we do for work, whether field or factory, what we imagine this labor in sand and rock to mean. And although the precise demeanor of doubt is never far in this incalculable mountain and desert, it is here we make our home. Here we choose the marbled canyon of our ancestors. This day, unlike any other, is the moment of redress. Our burnished land has suffered, but not without lament. And its people, you and I, feather or cone, reach for the trusted and damned alike to affirm what has been given. It has always been up to us, a generation for whom dust and wind define the seeds of family. Whether child or mother, stone or river, we begin this praise and praise again, that what is done be done for those to come.
Thank you. Sean Griffin is the author of a new memoir, Anthem for a Burnished Land, What We Leave in This Desert of Work and Words. You can hear Sean read from his book on Sunday, June 5th at 4 o'clock p.m. at the Silver City Schoolhouse in Silver City, Nevada.
Sean, thanks so much for being here today with us on The Creative Edge.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much.